And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 25th, 2020, which just happens to be Memorial Day, although you might not notice it if you're still locked down in your home. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger, who is in her home but is always rising above it. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm good. How are you, Ted?
So we have a bit of a good news story this week, Mariah. It has to do with solar panels. But before I jump into that article, I'm going to tell you a story. Maybe you have heard this story, but it's a story of dates back a couple thousand years of a prince in India, maybe a Mughal emperor in India many thousands of years ago. And he had a minister that helped him out and did a good job. So the emperor says to the minister, "Minister, I'll give you anything you want for your good work. Tell me, what would you like?" And so the minister says, "Okay, please, what I'd like you to do is get out a chessboard and put one grain of rice on the first square. And then double it and put two squares of rice on the second square. And then double that and put four squares of rice on the fourth. And just keep going like that." And the king says, "That sounds like, that's nothing. That's hardly any." So he says, "Okay, do it." He orders start. And of course, as the squares mount up, by the time they get to the 20th square or so, there's tons of rice being brought in before the king to put on the chessboard, right? And finally, the king looks and realizes that all of the food in the kingdom is going to go to this minister if he follows through on it. So he kills the minister, and that solves the problem that way. Point being that the power of two, when you double things, just keep doubling it, you can get to some incredibly large numbers incredibly quickly. It's really, I mean, I urge you to do the arithmetic in your head sometime.
Or you might be offed by a king. That's the moral of the story. You might get to large numbers, or you might be offed by a king.
Yeah, don't play games with a king. But I mean, you know, 2 to the 64, I think there's 64 squares on a chessboard. 2 to the 64th is a big number. Mm. So, what the heck does that have to do with climate change? Well, you might ask. A reasonable person might ask that question, right? It has to do with forecasting the price of solar photovoltaic systems, okay? And so I let me briefly reprise this article, Mariah, and then we can talk about it, okay? So there's a gentleman, we'll put up the link, who has been making forecasts of prices for solar panels since 2011. And he updates those predictions of the future cost of solar, the cost in 10 or 20 years, what solar is going to cost. He updates that every 5 years. He's currently updating his current prediction. Well, he comes to the conclusion that that the price of electricity from a solar panel is going to become insanely, world-changingly cheap. And the reason he feels he can predict that is because he's done the following thing. He's plotted his data in a very special way. And the data that he has is the average price of electricity from each new solar array that's installed around the world. Now, keep in mind, there's solar arrays going into China, into India, you know, across the world. There are these big, you know, there's a big one in Abu Dhabi, right? They put in, you know, lots of sunshine in Abu Dhabi. They put in this huge solar array to collect, to make electricity, right? So this gentleman is keeping track of the price of the electricity from those solar arrays. And what he's done is, to my mind, a very clever thing. He's plotted the price on the y-axis, the vertical axis, but on the x-axis, what he has plotted is the total amount of installed photovoltaic systems, okay? So you can quantify that, but you can say there's X amount today, and in pretty soon there's going to be twice that amount of installed photovoltaic systems, and then there's going to be four times and eight times, right? That's the x-axis. And what it turns out is that if you plot the price of solar panels installed systems versus the total number of photovoltaic systems installed globally, that every time that total base of installed photovoltaics doubles, the price drops by a fixed amount, right? Drops by something like 30 or 40%. Okay. So what's happening is that we're installing more and more solar cells, and so the total number of installed solar cells around the world keeps doubling fairly quickly, and every time it doubles, the price for those new installations goes down 30 or 40%. And that predicts that within 5 or 10 years, it's going to be, you know, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's like less than a penny per kilowatt hour of electricity, right? Some hugely small number. And the argument is that the reason that this sort of behavior exists is because of something called the learning curve, that as the world engineers install more and more solar panels, they learn how to do it faster and faster, right? They learn all the tricks. And so the cost keeps going down. Right, Mariah?
Wright's Law, is that what you mean? The learning curve, Wright's Law.
Wright's Law. And yeah. When did what context did that come up?
The Wright's Law?
Yeah.
It was made, put together when first studying the production cost of airplanes. And it was a kind of a similar relationship, this power law relationship, mm-hmm. where I think it also found in like the cumulative model, Ford Model T production,
yeah.
where it just yeah. rapidly gets less and less and less expensive. And it, in fact, one of the things they said is that so that solar has reached prices today that are 30 to 40 years ahead of what was predicted by the World Energy Outlook and the IEA,
right.
Which is the, what is it, the Energy...
International Energy Association.
Energy Agency. Yeah, International Energy Agency, which is the most well-known energy analyst and forecaster. So, you know, it's going leaps and bounds faster than even the professionals' forecasters were able to predict it would go.
Right. And because of this regularity, this Wright's Law, that says every time you double the installed base, the price goes down by some amount, right? You can argue about the amount, but the price goes down. I mean, that's really encouraging. And the data follows that curve. So you can say pretty much it's going to stay on that curve for a while, which means the price of the photovoltaics gets very cheap. Now, what the author points out is that at some point, the price of the photovoltaic system and the price of the electricity is basically driven by the cost of the real estate that you have to buy, right? And so the real estate is what, you know, so all of a sudden at some point that's the floor at which the electricity costs, but that doesn't have to do with the photovoltaic part of it, right? That's just, you know, you have to buy an acre of land in Abu Dhabi, it's going to cost a certain amount of money, and there you go, right? But he's making this argument that because the world needs to electrify everything, we have to electrify transportation, we have to electrify home heating, we have to electrify all these things and get off. In fact, we have to electrify manufacturing processes. Like, you're going to have to make steel with electricity, right? You know, those big molten vats of steel pouring out, right? We're going to have to use electricity to heat that stuff up. And so the appetite for electricity is almost endless. Right, and the population is going yada yada yada. So the idea that the electricity could be insanely cheap is a really encouraging sign, right?
Right. As is, there's a couple other encouraging signs I think we were going to talk about, right? The technology for storage
is getting better.
And the technology to convert rays of sun into electricity is getting better. So both of these things are very, very encouraging.
So a couple of shows ago, we were talking about the fact that a standard silicon solar panel at a theoretical best can only convert roughly 29 to 30% of the sunlight. You say, well, why is that? Well, it's because the solar panel reflects about half of the light that hits it, right? So half of the light reflects away, and you can't make electricity out of that. And then of the 50% of the light that gets into the solar panel, at best 30% of it is in the right sort of energy range to excite the silicon atoms. Okay. Well, it turns out that there is a new material they have found. They've been aware of it for a while, but they're very encouraged by the development. And the material is called it's a Russian sounding word. Let me make sure I'm
perovskites.
Perovskite, right?
Yeah, perovskites, yeah.
A perovskite, that, go ahead. If you get it, I mean, it's a material that is made. Can you read let's see.
I mean, so a perovskite is any compound that shares the same crystal structure as the mineral perovskite, which is also known as calcium titanate.
Okay.
And they're the ones that they would use for solar cells actually won't be mined from the earth, but they'll be made in laboratories. So they're synthetic or what's called hybrid perovskites. Perovskites. And they use a mix of organic metals and compounds and halides like chlorides, bromides, and iodides to sub in for calcium and titanium in the crystal lattice that makes up these perovskites. And this unique structure and chemical composition, they've been quoted as saying they're kind of awesome in terms of their power conversion efficiency. My goodness. So they're really, really, really good at absorbing sunlight and converting it into power.
Right. And from what I read, they could potentially get 40% as opposed to 30% of the, they could ultimately capture 40% of the light that falls on the solar cell as into electricity. And, you know, it's also relatively common materials that go into the manufacture of the perovskite. I mean, I think that it's very interesting. And the sobering part is that this perovskite, hybrid perovskite, which is hard thing to even say, right? Is this, this funky material, right? The perovskites are not chemically very stable. So you can make them and they last for a couple days or a couple weeks, but they have to last for 20 years. So the big theoretical, laboratory push is to make these materials stable over decades so they can go into solar cells. But it's a good news story, right? Because we'll probably hear of it again. And if you go on and Google it, perovskite, perovskite. It's an interesting, interesting thing.
Yeah.
And the other good news, as you mentioned, it was mentioned in the original article. We talked about the insanely cheap solar cell, but it's good to keep in mind that even if solar panels cost nothing, there would still be a nighttime where they didn't produce electricity, right? So no matter how cheap it is, you still need some sunshine. And so that brings up the whole question of the intermittency of renewable energy. Intermittency is a good word to be able to roll off your tongue, right? It means that sometimes the wind doesn't blow and sometimes the sun doesn't shine. And just in order to solve that, what you need is a battery.
But to put a quick fine point on that, I think it's important to note that intermittency I think it's with renewable energy is actually preferred to fossil fuels, because when a fossil fuel system crashes, when you have a blackout, you can't predict it, you can't forecast it. It's the whole system crashes and you're left with nothing. Right. Whereas the intermittency from solar, wind, water is much more predictable. So that's, just to say, as of right now, even though we don't have the battery storage to get us over that, it's still, the intermittency is much, much, much less of a factor than people would make it out to be in terms of the hurdles to renewable energy. So
making
anyways,
a,
but carry on with the
okay,
battery.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I think that the technological innovation in the renewable energy industry is focused on what's called storage. Again, it's a buzzword, but it basically means a big battery, which is, again, a buzzword for ways to store electricity, right? You can, for example, if you have a water tower and you use your electricity to pump the water up to the top of the tower, and then when you want some electricity, you open the spigot and the water comes back out of the tower and turns the turbine, right, at night, that's a battery. It's a kind of a battery, right? So there's lots of batteries out there, but one concept that's floating around is something called a long-duration battery. So that is to say, if you have a solar array making a megawatt of power, then you can have, next to it, have a battery that holds 10 hours worth of output from that solar array, which can then be siphoned back onto the grid through the course of the night. And that allows you to overcome the intermittency problem because you can store, you have enough solar panels to charge that battery during the day and you can use the power at night. There is a company here in Boston, I think it's called Form, which is a strange
yep,
name,
Form Energy.
But they are in the process of installing a what's called a flow battery. So here's another kind of funky battery where it depends on flowing chemicals through pipes, right, to hold the electricity. That's going into a place in Minnesota, right? Outside of Minneapolis?
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like that the batteries they would make would last 150 hours as opposed to
wow.
that 4 hours or 10 hours that you were just talking about.
I hope and pray, Mariah, in a couple of weeks, you and I will be talking about Wright's Law for batteries, right?
Yeah.
As we start to build these and learn how to do it, the price of all that goes way down. But the other thing I would say, we'll put up a link to the article from the Minnesota newspaper that's talking about the installation of this battery. But I can't not say this. I mean, the company is said to be secretive about the actual technology of the battery, right? But if you read the article, they got a $4 million grant from the U.S. government to sort of develop that. So while they may be secretive, you as a taxpayer own some of that intellectual property, right? Because we paid for some of it. And I certainly hope that that we find a way with the big ideas that are floating around in the world nowadays that we should be able to tap into some of that. And I think basically make sure that everybody else in the world can have access to that intellectual property as well, since we paid for it. But that's a whole other show,
yeah,
right, Mariah?
And I mean, not just since we paid for it, but because we need people who can do a lot of different things with this battery technology, right? I mean, that will certainly help propel renewable energies even faster than they're already going. And so hanging on to that technology, I think, is sort of at odds with the need to continue to move renewable energy forward.
I think it's an interesting show. I'm not sure how to do the research, but interesting show to discuss the wisdom of open intellectual property, right? So when these things are invented, should we be giving it to the Chinese and to everybody because the situation is so desperate? And you can, I mean, and the analogy is that in the early 1950s, I think it was Schottky invented the transistor and he got the patent on it. And instead of saying, oh boy, I'm going to be a rich man, he made that patent public so that anybody could build the transistor. And look where we are today.
Yeah.
Right? Your cell phone is full of, I mean, every transistor everywhere, right? And so the idea that we should invent these little energy storage things but then keep it in the pot, and so one guy makes a whole lot of money. Anyway, that's a different show, Mariah. We will have to think about that one.
I know. There's a lot to talk about there, too.
All right. So we will put down that topic for the time being. Anyway, solar looks like it's getting cheap, cheap, cheap. That's a good thing. And I don't know. It's just a good thing, right?
It's a great thing.
We'll put up links to what we talked about in the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have an idea about some intellectual property that I can steal from you, please send it to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Tell us what's good or what's bad about the show, what you want us to talk about. We'd love to hear from you. Of course, you can listen to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all those modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we're going to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. Well, Mariah, thank you for being so sunny today.
And no pun intended, while we talk about solar panels, I love it.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.